Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capital Report.
Otherwise great health insurance doesn't mean much if it doesn't cover the hospital bill. Now Florida lawmakers think they have a solution.
And we were able to bring everyone to the table and try to bring a bill that I think everyone can live with.
Also tonight, Florida lawmakers are leaning on the state's insurers to pay out unclaimed life insurance policies.
There is probably another $700 million to $1 billion of unpaid benefits to go.
We'll also get the latest on compensation for the families of those who were victims of brutality at a long-closed state reform school and learn what Florida lawmakers plan to keep the state's signature citrus crop from collapsing. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the end of the seventh week of the 2016 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capital Report. Governor Rick Scott has raised the profile of balanced billing in the healthcare system, and now the Florida legislature is trying to tamp down on it. Lynn Hatter reports a Senate bill limiting how and when hospitals can charge patients for out-of-network services is on its way to the chamber floor.
If there's one thing Governor Rick Scott's Hospital and Healthcare Funding Commission did, it was to highlight surprise medical bills. Scott encouraged Floridians to report what he called price gouging complaints, and it worked. The state held a forum on the issue last October, and David Rogers, a chemistry professor, talked about two bills he received. One was for $27,000.
So you can imagine the distress that would cause an entire family, which previously thought that our insurance was going to protect us, only to find out that that just wasn't true.
These types of bills for services consumers thought were covered are referred to as balanced billing. In Rogers' case, the hospital was considered an in-network provider, but the doctor who treated the patient was not. Early on, the Florida House unveiled legislation cracking down on the practice. Here's Republican Representative John Wood explaining the bill.
It prohibits balanced billing for emergency services and unexpected billing for non-emergency service providers in PPOs and EPOs. It provides a formula for the insurance companies to use in reimbursing the non-contracted providers of both emergency and non-emergency services.
In short, Rogers may not have gotten the bill under this scenario. The plan is based on recommendations by Florida's healthcare consumer advocate, Sharon James. The House measure is up for full consideration by that chamber. And now a bill by Miami Republican Senator Rene Garcia is a step closer to the Senate floor.
I've been asked to try to thread this needle very carefully. And when we first started, no one thought that we can try to figure this out. We had, you know, we had the HMOs on one side, we had the Florida Medical Association on one side, the Florida Hospital Association and different hospital groups on another side, and we were able to bring everyone to the table and try to bring a bill that I think everyone can live with.
The bill also requires providers and insurers to try and resolve billing issues without patients getting involved. A provision limiting insurance companies from retroactively denying coverage and then recouping payments because of unpaid premiums was brought before the Senate's Appropriations Committee. Republican Senator Joe Negron says it was a consumer protection.
The provider, the doctor, the nurse practitioner, the hospital, has a right to reasonably rely on the representation made to them, not only verbally, but also with a written authorization code that is communicated to the...
But Garcia objected, saying the amendment could hurt the larger bill, which was a compromise between the insurance company's advocates and lawmakers who have worked on the issue for months.
Senator Negron, I do agree with the bill, the provisions of this amendment itself, but just not on this bill and the way it is done. I wish it would have been crafted in a separate way to make sure that we fix a problem in its entirety and not just downstream as opposed to upstream.
That issue failed to be added. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
Changes are likely in store for the state's life insurance industry, too. Nick Evans reports lawmakers are on the verge of approving a measure that requires companies to look harder for beneficiaries.
When a family member passes away, life insurance policies can help cover things like the funeral, outstanding debts, really anything. But what if the surviving family members don't know about the policy? Well, when that happens, the money stays with the insurance company, earning interest. Delray Beach Republican Representative Bill Hager wants to see insurers getting more proactive about policies. He says, just look at annuities.
As to annuities, these life insurers have routinely searched the Social Security death database. And when they got a hit meaning one of their annuitants has died, they've ceased payments immediately.
But when it comes to life insurance policies, it's just the opposite. Rather than checking the database to find out when they need to pay beneficiaries, some companies are maintaining a studied ignorance.
To summarize, and what this bill addresses is the following inappropriate behavior by some insurers, and that is when it's an insurer's vested economic interest to search the database, that is with annuities, they have done so, and when it has not been in their vested economic interest to search the database, they have not searched the database. And again,
under Hager's proposal, insurance companies would be required to check their roles against the Social Security death database annually. Paul Sanford from the Florida Insurance Council opposes the measure. He says the idea of checking the database going forward is fine, but he takes issue with the retroactive provisions in Hager's bill.
Only two states have any retroactive application in their the new unclaimed property laws. New York has an 18-month look-back period. Nevada has a two-year period. Our bill, this bill, goes back to 1992, which is about 25 years. We think that's too much.
Hager has teamed up with Florida's Insurance Commissioner Kevin McCarty and CFO Jeff Atwater to craft the bill. Thursday, Atwater was on hand to lobby for the measure before a House panel, and he says there's a lot of money out there.
Our current run rate estimates there is probably another $700 million to $1 billion of unpaid benefits to go.
And Atwater put a face to the problem. His office helped connect Jackie Bigany with an insurance policy she didn't know about.
We didn't get a lot of money. We got about a couple thousand dollars. But when you have medical expenses for your mother and household expenses, and our family can't afford to help support that, and when that money came in, it was a miracle.
Despite opposition from some, it's almost certain the measure will wind up on the governor's desk. Opposition in the insurance industry is tied to specific provisions rather than the underlying policy. And many companies have voluntarily agreed to institute procedures in line with the bill, to the tune of $500 million already.
Someone may conclude that $500 million of returned life insurance benefits to the people that paid the premium, their beneficiary, is small money. It's not small money. 151,000 of your constituents, but for us doing what we did in reaching settlement agreements, would still be in the dark, would still not know that their loved one made sacrifices for their benefit to go to college, keep a house, and keep a small business open.
So far, the bill has gotten exactly zero no votes. It's already passed the Senate, and Thursday's vote was its final stop before the House floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A bill that would prevent clergy members from being forced to perform marriage ceremonies contrary to their beliefs is ready to be heard by the full Florida Senate and House. Supporters say more safeguards are needed to protect clergy from potential lawsuits, especially if they refuse to perform same-sex weddings. But with 2 weeks left in the 2016 session, neither chamber has taken up the controversial measure yet. The bill was set to be debated on the Senate floor this week and was temporarily postponed, but retained on the Senate calendar. The House, meanwhile, has placed the measure on its calendar of bills to be heard next Tuesday. Still to come on Capitol Report, a Florida fracking bill narrowly defeated in an important Senate committee yesterday could be miraculously rising from the primordial ooze in Tallahassee, and opponents are not pleased by the prospect.
Are all these risks worth what we would be getting in return?
Florida's citrus industry is in deep trouble. Some of the state's leaders say more funding could save it.
And have the citrus industry come roaring back, as we all know and hope that it can do with answers that research will find us.
Florida senators have approved a bill to help the families impacted by the now-closed Dozier School for Boys.
This is our opportunity to say this will never be tolerated again. And the Florida Senate says, we apologize. This is the least that we can do.
And Florida lawmakers keep pushing to make the state among the nation's most veteran-friendly locations.
Support for Capital Report is provided by The Able Trust, 25 years of connecting businesses with workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to interview and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.
A lot of interesting things happening, though, yesterday in the Florida legislature. And one of the most controversial, as we heard Jim Ash's piece on yesterday's Capitol Report, had to do with fracking. And the bill finally went down to a very narrow one-vote defeat, 9-10. And suddenly, what, Jim Ash, we hear it's still kicking?
Oh, yeah, that's right, Tom. You know, the rules allow a reconsideration if someone on the winning side makes that motion. And Senator Lizbeth Beniquisto did just that. So technically, the bill is still on the agenda and could be taken up again. Senator Joe Negron, a Republican from Stewart, voted against it. And Negron is going to be the next Senate president, so there wouldn't be a lot of members who would want to cross him.
Well, what exactly happened, Jim? Why did this go down to defeat? It looked like that there was a lot of pressure for it to pass.
You know, there was a lot of pressure, but the environmentalists really did get their act together. Every committee meeting was flooded with opponents who got up and spoke for hours very passionately. It boils down to a question of whether the fracking companies can come in and frack now or not. Richter says they can. He says the bill is necessary to establish a framework, some strict guidelines to make it safe. But there's a lot of members in the legislature who don't believe that's true. They think fracking's dangerous. The DEP should be able to stop it at any moment. And here's the problem. When Richter brought DEP Secretary John Steverson up to testify to that question, Steverson didn't exactly give a yes or no answer. Here's what he said.
By the law of the state, by the law of this body, I cannot view the applicant based upon their technology.
I talked to David Micah today. Now, David Micah is an industry lobbyist. He's been working on this bill. They support it. He's the director of the Florida Petroleum Council. And he says, yes, it's true. The industry believes it could come in and continue, or it could come in and start fracking right now. But they would anticipate a lot of lawsuits, and they don't want to be held up in court. They said if there was a permitting program, that question would be settled once and for all.
What about Jack LaValla? Because he's been a pivotal part of this entire discussion. Where does he stand on all this?
LaValla was very concerned about public access to the chemicals that would be used in fracking. The bill addresses that, but it's not clear how the bill would let the public view a list of the chemicals that are being used, but at the same time protect the industry's right to have trade secrets. When the DEP experts came up to testify about that, it still wasn't clear when they were done. And here's what LaValla had to say about that.
And I don't think I've seen a better tap dance than what the department did today on the subject of trade secrets and the disclosure of these chemicals. And until I get comfortable with that issue, I'm a no on this bill.
Well, you had mentioned earlier, Jim, the high level of controversy and the reluctance of some of the leadership even to get into this right now, because it is an election year and those sorts of issues become toxic because it's almost a lose-lose situation for so many lawmakers who are up for election. Even if they want to curry favor from, let's say, the petroleum industry, they face the wrath of environmentalists and vice versa.
Well, you know, Tom, imagine if you're someone like a Republican from Miami, like Ana Terra Flores. She's a conservative, a fiscal conservative, but there's also a lot of people down in South Florida, a lot of environmentalists who are very concerned about the Everglades. I think she summed up the mood of the committee very well. Here's what she said.
That just leaves us with too many unanswered questions as to what does fracking mean for our environment? What does fracking mean for our children? And I think the major question is, are all these risks worth what we would be getting in return?
So, Jim Ash, when are we going to know how this whole thing is going to fall out?
Well, I talked to Richter today, and he said he's going to do a lot of thinking over the weekend, and he'll have his mind made up Monday as they're making up the schedule for Tuesday's committee meeting.
And we will be checking back with you then. Florida Public Radio's Jim Ash. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks, Tom.
Citrus greening continues to plague the state's multi-billion-dollar industry. The latest estimates show a significant decrease in crops. But Regan McCarthy reports Florida government leaders aren't ready to give up.
Florida Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam says the state's citrus industry isn't doomed yet. He says lawmakers have a chance to make several changes this session that could help.
Get our arms around this disease and survive it and have the citrus industry come roaring back, as we all know and hope that it can do with answers that research will find us.
Putnam's office is asking the legislature for about $18 million to support more research efforts. Putnam says he's also looking for funds to support a program that would help to eradicate abandoned groves, which can contribute to the spread of citrus greening by supporting the psyllid, or the bug that spreads the disease.
So if you're in the citrus industry and you're doing everything that science tells you to do and everything that all the research that you have funded tells you to do, and your neighbor's not because they're an out-of-state absentee landowner or because they've chosen to exit the industry but don't want to remove their trees because of the cost or the fear that it would jeopardize their greenbelt, this will help us eliminate that inoculum and reduce the pest count.
And Putnam isn't the only one pushing the move. U.S. Senator Bill Nelson stopped by the Florida Capitol recently to discuss plans to help the state's citrus industry.
We've got a lot of these abandoned groves, so I went to see the Commissioner of Agriculture, and he is trying to get some money in the budget to get growers to be able to plow up and burn these groves, because otherwise they're infected with the bacteria, and it just makes it all the more difficult to try to stop the spread of the disease.
Nelson said he's heard the governor could be standing in the way of the project's funding.
The commissioner is not at all concerned that he can get it passed in the legislature, like folks like Galvano supporting it. He's concerned about the governor vetoing the $8 million, and that would be a shame if he did.
That's Bradenton Republican Senator Bill Galvano he's talking about, in case you're wondering. Governor Rick Scott says funding for citrus greening projects is a regular piece of the state budget and is something he generally supports.
I think every year I've been here, there's been money in the budget for citrus greening. It's a significant issue in our state. I mean, if you've seen the downturn in our citrus production, it's significant. We've been putting money into research. The federal government has been putting money into research. We don't have a solution yet. I wish we did, because it's having a dramatic impact on the citrus industry.
But Scott isn't making any promises, saying he hasn't seen the budget yet. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
The Florida Senate has passed a bill allowing the state to provide financial help to the families who want to rebury the remains of loved ones found on the panhandle property of the former Dozier School for Boys. Sasha Cordner reports the bill's House counterpart is also on the way to that chamber's floor for a vote.
Senate Democratic leader Athenia Joyner says throughout her life she'd heard of the alleged horrors that occurred at the Dozier School for Boys while it was still up and running decades ago.
But I was a recent college graduate, young woman with no influence and nothing that I could do but listen and try to console them as they told about the many things that happened in Mariana, the beatings, the segregation, the disappearance of some of the boys.
Now, as a lawmaker, Joyner says she can do something about it. For the past couple of years, University of South Florida researchers have exhumed the remains of boys believed to have died and were buried on the property because of alleged abuse. Of the 51 remains found, 7 have been positively ID'd using DNA. Reburial efforts are costly for the families, and questions remain with what to do with the unclaimed remains. A bill by Joyner seeks to address those concerns.
I'm just happy to see that we are at a point where we can at least bring some relief to those families and provide for them to reinter the bodies of the remains that have been identified, and to establish a task force that will determine a proper memorial and the location of the memorial. The task force will be chaired by the Secretary of State, and there will be other stakeholders selected by some of the cabinet members.
The Dozer School is located in Jackson County in Mariana, and that's in my district, in the 1st District. And Senator Joyner knows that there's one issue that I'd like to place on the record.
That's former Senate President Don Gates of Niceville. He says while he understands and supports Joyner's overall bill, there's something else he'd like to see in her proposal.
The Dozer School property has about 1,300 acres. About 10% of that acreage was actually used for the school. An issue that needs to be remembered is that the rest of the acreage, probably more than 1,000 acres, still is acreage that technically is owned by the state. But ultimately, that property should not lie fallow and ought to be used for civic or educational or recreational or economic development purposes.
Stille acknowledged that the researchers had found toxic areas of the property and an in-depth environmental study has not yet been completed, but his hope is future lawmakers will address his issue. But Joyner says while she shares Gates' concerns, she says it's really up to another party.
Your concerns were also mine, and that's why I inquired as we developed the legislation. And I know that the cabinet is taking this all into consideration, and they will make the decision about the development of the property.
And all 40 senators voted unanimously for her bill. Meanwhile, Tampa Democratic Representative Edna Raines' bill encountered some resistance in its second committee hearing. And when he presented before House members of the bill's last committee stop Thursday, Narain tried to put lawmakers' minds at ease.
I want to be very clear that the bill, as it's been heard in the last two committees and is being presented today, is not a claims bill. This is a bill that simply will allow the Florida legislature to allocate up to $7,500 to the families of those who may have lost a loved one at Dozier to conduct a proper burial service. This is not something that puts a black eye on Florida. It's actually something that puts us in the proper posture to do right by the families and do the right thing for the state, given the circumstances of what has occurred.
And his bill passed the House State Affairs Committee unanimously, sending it on to the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally tonight, state lawmakers want to make Florida the most veteran-friendly in the nation. This session, lawmakers are sticking to that pledge with a push to improve veteran employment and education. Kate Payne reports.
Bobby Carbonell served in the National Guard and now represents the advocacy group Florida is for Veterans. Carbonell says vets have a lot to offer when they leave the service.
There's a million skill sets for different jobs. There's plumbers, there's carpenters, people who work on jet engines, there's people that fire weapons, there's people who do computer software programming. If you could think of a job in the civilian world, there's probably a military equivalent of that job.
According to the U.S. Census Bureau, vets are more likely than the average American to have a high school diploma, but less likely to have a college degree. Valrico Representative Jake Rayburn and Senator Tom Lee of Brandon want to close that gap. Here's Representative Rayburn.
First, it allows honorably discharged veterans to receive college credit
for college-level training and education acquired in the military. Secondly, it requires DOE to include the defense language proficiency test to the list of acceleration mechanisms for which college credit may be awarded. And lastly, it authorizes a tuition and fee waiver for all recipients of the Purple Heart Award.
The bill has already passed the House and is ready for a floor vote in the Senate. Jacksonville Senator Aaron Bean wants to help vets utilize their service skills when they leave the military.
Not only do they learn the military arts, but everybody in the military has a skill, and maybe that skill is to fix an automobile or fix the heating and air unit in a building or engineer something.
Bean's bill would allow vets to get certified for their military experience as construction workers, electricians, or paramedics.
They learn these skills, and when they get out of the military, they come to our state, and then we tell them that they have to go back and get trained for whatever skill that they learned in the military. Well, if we pass 1504, that won't be the case.
Senator Greg Evers of Milton says veterans are already attracted to Florida, but he wants to make sure they stick around.
Look, let's face it. They come, they enjoy what we got, and then they move off. And then when they get ready to retire, guess what? They move back. So, you know, once they get the sand in their shoes, we can't get rid of them. So this is just another tool that we would have to see that our veterans would have a job here in the state of Florida.
The state already prioritizes the employment of veterans. Evers' bill would take that a step further with targeted recruitment of vets.
Few steps are made to attract and employ them. And so what this bill does, it requires state agencies to actively recruit veterans to work for the state.
The bill is ready for a floor vote in both chambers. With leadership skills and on-the-job experience, vets don't leave the service empty-handed, and the economy reflects that. According to Congress, Florida veterans' unemployment is lower than the state's overall rate and the rate of veterans nationwide. These stats beg the question, are lawmakers' vet programs mission critical? Bobby Carbonell at Florida is for Veterans says yes.
So there is a need, because there's definitely a stigma associated with veterans, and we need to kind of help bridge that gap and get the civilian employers really thinking about veterans as an asset to their business.
Lawmakers have about 2 weeks to make their case before the end of the 2016 legislative session. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows, at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.